This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jas Andrew, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Actually, this is quite relating to your earlier story, Matt, about how we seem to be working for these tech companies and the products that create, or whether it's products or services. Because there is this right to repair movement that is fighting back against the unfixable device. And this is a growing movement. It's a range of DIY groups. They offer classes and online instructions on how to fix everything. I think one of the most famous one is iFixit or fixit.com. So you can actually go online and search on how to repair maybe your battery that's been damaged on your phone or laptops and stuff.
Right. I know, they always like start everything off with a big tube of something made from silicon that just scares me.
And also, I think they what is good about those kind of sites is they give you the difficulty before you venture into something else. But that, I guess, the way that we've moved in today's space when it comes to the technology that we use, it's now restrict us in actually repairing a device.
Yeah, and you know, there's like everything, there's more than one side to this. And on the one side, you have like with a lot of the miniaturization. Like for example, I'm looking at the website on an Apple MacBook right now, and my MacBook, the motherboard is actually mounted on the reverse of the screen. It's like one seamless unit. Yeah. Break one thing,
everything breaks.
But that also makes it much more difficult to repair it yourself as well, and especially with miniaturization, it gets harder and harder to isolate these components to repair. But having said that, on the other side, it's when these companies tell you you can't repair it yourself that's the problem.
Which is let's go back to the first point where it's these devices are becoming really slim and they're you know, it's just one component in the entire motherboard. So if that spoils, the motherboard has to go out and change. It becomes too costly. You might as well just get a brand new laptop. But like, have we actually demanded for things to be slimmer and thinner? I've always said that, you know, it's fine for my phone to not be this slim, to just have a larger battery, because I would love my phone to last longer. I never demanded for a thinner phone.
Exactly. I mean,
but that's a feature that they sell.
And my wife has constantly been asking me to be slimmer and thinner, and I've resisted that entirely. You know, like you said, it just seems to be a way that things are moving forward. But also, you know, it's again like the Apple thing of using screws that people can't undo. You need a special tool to open these devices. Yeah. Why are you so protective about these things? I own it. If I want to mess around inside it, why am I not allowed to?
And then they do this thing. This is, again, borderlining of the conspiracy theory of planned obsolescence, because some of these devices, even though if the hardware is fine, they give you like a software update that then you realize, hang on a minute, it's becoming a lot slower now. Like, I can't seem to open this app and it keeps crashing. You get frustrated. And what happens? It ends up in the drawer and you get a new phone.
No, exactly. I mean, I know one of the big German white goods manufacturers, one of the high-end ones, they design their washing machines to last for at least 25 years. And they make the software upgradable. So you can go back to the manufacturer and update it with new programs so that it stays economical and, you know, more environmentally friendly as time goes on. But they have purposely engineered it to last for that amount of time.
Wow. And it's such a rarity to see technology companies, whether it's laptops, smartphones, tablets, and all these devices, to make devices that last longer than maybe 2 years, three?
Absolutely. And I know part of it is, again, because anything that's running on microprocessors, we suddenly get faster ones. But that doesn't mean that we have to junk these items. I mean, we were talking on one of the shows a few weeks ago about the fact that all of these modular phones have kind of stopped. And you were saying you really liked the idea of modular phones because you don't have to throw them away. You can expand them, you can change them, you can upgrade them. And that is something that's missing. I mean, you know, when back in the kind of 90s and the early 2000s, you know, it was all about modding your own PC. You didn't buy a PC from a particular manufacturer. You just bought a load of components. Yeah, exactly, and shove it in a case. And you
could do it with phones as well. You could customize your phones.
Yes, precisely. Mm. But we have moved away from that, and we've definitely lost something.
I don't like it at all. I really want to be able to actually just replace battery, for example, because I charge my phone so often because nobody's going to give me an all-day battery phone. So I have to charge my phone nearly 3 times a day. And then when that happens, the charge cycle goes down rapidly and then the lifespan of the battery just decreases. After a year, I realize instead of charging it 3 times, I'm charging it 6 times. But if I were to change the battery to the shop, it's going to take like a week without a phone, and I can't do that, and it's going to cost me nearly half of the price of the phone, and then I'm just like, yeah, I can't wait for the new version to come out, and then using the new version.
Exactly. New phone. And even going back to what you were saying about, you know, this move to make things smaller, slimmer all the time, my backup phone or my fun phone or whatever is an old Ericsson T28S.
With the flip down.
And it's really tiny. It's really compact. It's really cute. I mean, it's got a tiny screen and it doesn't do any smart anything. But having said that, it's already tiny and small, but you can replace the battery. Yeah. You can have it fixed, modded. You can change things like the aerial. We don't need to have all of these things hidden away. I mean, as you said, if it means having a replaceable battery, I'm fine with the phone being a few millimeters thicker.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no difference. I mean, okay, admittedly, if you're wearing really skinny jeans, you're going to appreciate the phone. But most of us are slinging it in a bag anyway, half of the time.
And we're just losing that curiosity of learning how to fix things or when things go wrong, because, you know, a lot of these kids these days, they just, you know, don't care about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And even with things like coding, I mean, Google has that great coding system where you can use blocks to put apps together. And that's really fantastic. I mean, it allows people who don't have any knowledge of that to put these basic apps together. But it doesn't actually introduce you to what the coding is, because all you're doing is moving these kind of pre-packaged lumps around. It's kind of like Lego, but you're not really learning how to structure anything.
And yet this IT company say that we need to, you know, learn how to, you know, learn basically. But we can't learn because there's nothing to learn. You don't allow us to learn.
You don't let us take the back off and look at things. Well, I would like to point out that Jeff made me read through a Reddit thread for this piece. And the one thing that I've learned from that Reddit thread is that they're really rubbish at swearing. I'm way better at swearing than most Reddit users.
Oh, gosh, yeah, Reddit. Oh, man. Anyways, we'll be right back. And we do have some really interesting story about how you can actually not go through the vaccination process, but actually use something completely different to cure yourself from, I guess, flu diseases and stuff. We'll talk about it in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pops, Matt Armitage. And Matt, the medical technology space has taken a turn.
Yes. Well, it has taken a turn. I don't even really know how to approach this story. And I have to say outright, this story may not even be true. It may well be a hoax. It was reported in Time magazine, and even Time have acknowledged that it may not be
a true
story.
They're just not sure because they can't find information about this company.
So this is a company that may be based in Europe. It may be based in the States. It may not even exist. But they are a medical technology startup called Vaive Tissue. Now,
sounds like a cool name, though.
Yes. if you're eating right now, you may want to not be eating.
Stop. Yeah.
The way this works is that for $80, Vaive Tissue will send you a tissue that someone has already sneezed into so that you can catch a cold or a flu and thus inoculate yourself against that disease. So this is kind of building on the trend of
anti-vaccination
and all that kind of thing, not putting chemicals
sick
in your body. So rather than do that, you inhale somebody else's sneeze and deliberately make yourself sick. I mean, that's kind of how vaccines work a bit, in that you give yourself a tiny dose of the disease.
And it builds an immune strength, yeah.
But this is like, you know, developing a tolerance to smallpox by giving yourself smallpox. It's not the
tissues.
Most sensible. These are tissues.
Tissues.
These are just used tissues that somebody has sneezed in and somebody else is selling to you for $80.
$80.
And according to their website, they've sold out, if they ever had any in the first place.
They sold one, probably. Like, they only made one or something. Like,
you know, this is the thing. And as a lot of medical experts have pointed out, there are actually, in fact, we've covered it on this show, there are over 200 different viruses that make up colds and flu.
So I need to buy 200 of these tissues.
Yes, and make yourself sick with a cold, probably for about 4 years continuously. And all the risks of developing pneumonia and anything else. It's being pushed by its founder, a guy who apparently is called Oliver Neeson, or who may not be. He may be a 30-year-old founder. He kind of, apparently Time said he reluctantly gave up his information. He's calling it a freedom and a luxury to choose. And it's true. It is a luxury to choose. If you have $80, you can choose to inhale somebody else's dirty tissues.
Yeah.
For 40 ringgit, I will sell you as many dirty tissues as you like. And I'll get you, give you the chance to select a number of different diseases.
I'll just stick to my jabs. I'm just going to go that route. Because so, falling sick for 4 years, that's
to get through 200 different... Yeah, yeah.
No, thank you.
And the problem that they say they have on the supply side is that they don't have enough sick people to sneeze into the tissues to make other people sick. Anyway... I'm pretty sure that this is absolute nonsense.
I hope so.
But if you don't trust flu vaccinations and you want to develop an immunity to one of the over 200 viruses, go to Vaeve Tissue, V-A-E-V, tissue.com.
Because apparently, according to the founder, they've actually claimed that they have sold thousands of tissues.
Yeah, like I
and
said.
I'm like, yeah, right. Really? Thousands of $80 tissues that's infected by... other people's diseases.
I mean, I can imagine it doing well on something like Goop, where Gwyneth Paltrow actually says she's sneezed into them herself. But other than that, not really.
No, not at all. Anyways, moving on to something, I guess, a little bit more cheerful is I'm a big fan of simulation games. And Matt has this problem of me playing simulation games because he's like, why would you want to play sim work when you are at work?
Yeah, that part I don't get.
Yeah. Like, why would I want to play train simulator when all it does is just move forwards and backwards and nothing else? Like, you know, how... And like, he doesn't get it. But you know what? People who play this SimCity, the really popular city planner builder game that was really popular, I think, in the early 90s and in the year 2000s, they've actually... so this came from LA Times. They've done a story with a few people who are actually currently working as city planners, or at least some part of the town hall when it comes to city planning, who've actually inspired them to get into this role because of SimCity. So one of the person that interviewed, Jason Baker, he was studying political science at UC Davis when he got his hands on SimCity. He really enjoyed making the city run well, and the conscientious approach gave him a boost in the class on local government. So instead of writing a term paper about the three different models for how cities can develop, he actually built three different scenarios in the game, and then he let the game run on its own, writing about how the virtual cities fared. And he ended up getting an A. And right now, he is actually the vice president of transportation and housing at the nonprofit Silicon Valley Leadership Group. He also served as a council member in Campbell, California from 2008 and 2016, which is a tenure that includes two stints as the mayor as well. And this is 30 years ago when Maxis released SimCity for the Mac and Amiga.
No, this is a fantastic story, really, because it does show the kind of positive influence that games can have on people. I'm not sure that Call of Duty and Fortnite are going to influence people in quite the same way.
Maybe certain countries, not sure.
Yeah, exactly. But it is a really awesome idea. I mean, this idea that because city planning and urban planning is not the most glamorous profession, but it is something that's really critical to our lives. I mean, we all rely every day on urban planners. Yeah. They're the people who keep our traffic lights working. They're the people who keep the roads flowing more or less. and when things break down in those systems, especially in terms of public transport, we all feel the effects. So if these games are giving people the kind of inspiration to come into these areas with new ideas and new approaches. I think that's really valuable.
I have a similar game that's actually not SimCity, but on the PS4. The name now sort of just passes
if it's
by
Sim Girlfriend,
no,
then,
it's not
then,
Sim Girlfriend.
Then
man.
That needs to be a different show.
That will be on a different show, but I don't have that game or app. But there are newer versions of this kind of games, and I think it goes back to the original itself and how they've introduced millions of players to the joys and also the frustrations, like you mentioned about zoning and street grids and infrastructure funding.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it influenced a generation of people who plan cities for a living, and many urban and city transit planners, architects, government officials, activists, they all say that SimCity was the first taste of running a city. It was the first time they realized that neighborhoods, towns, and cities were things that were planned, and it's actually someone's job to decide where the bus stop is going to be,
exactly.
And is this a good location or not?
And I had a flatmate in London who had a game, who various SimCity games, but he would run them for months at a time. And he would be playing on them every night. And he was an accountant, and he eventually went to work as an accountant for London Transport.
There you go.
Exactly. So,
yeah, it's really fascinating. Nicole Payne, she's now the program official for the National Association of City Transportation Officials in New York City. She said, I wouldn't be where I am today without SimCity. They did more than a dozen interviews in the article, and people who went from SimCity enthusiasts to professional planners talking about how they like the game and the way that you can visualize and see how a single change just kind of affect the entire city and stuff. So kudos to the designers of the game, because you know they actually made this game for, initially they thought it's just going to be for like architects and people interested in town hall planning.
But and it became
everyone. It became
a massive explosion. Yeah.
And then SimCity, from SimCity, they had like a whole bunch of other kind of similar type of simulation games. And then of course later on it was bought over by EA, and then they had The Sims, which was another big game where you get to play God. Basically, you get to be Morgan Freeman.
Yes, that was kind of cool. But even before that, like Microsoft's Flight Simulator, the one that was baked into the operating system, so many pilots.
They used that, yeah.
They used that, and they got their love of flying from messing around on the desktop of their PC.
Mm-hmm. Clearly, I wasn't good enough in any of those simulation games then, Matt. Maybe I was doing Sim Radio. Who knows?
I think my problem was it was just Space Invaders, and I'm still waiting for the aliens.
All right. What do we have for Geek Tunes for today, Matt?
Well, actually, we've got the official anthem to this year's Formula One Championship,
ooh,
which is by the Chemical Brothers, another group of 40-something-year-old men who've never grown up, rather like myself. This is the Chemical Brothers with We've Got to Try.
Also, I know we don't have King of Culture, but if we do, if we did have King of Culture, Formula One on Netflix has this, you know, documentary. It's like 8 series, 9 series episodes on just the Formula One. Really great.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. That popped up on my thing. I haven't watched it yet.
Really good one. Anyways, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.